This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
The Charlottesville City Council reviewed the details of the city's $33.85 million capital improvement program budget during a work session held on Wednesday, March 17, 2010. Council made several revisions to the budget related to the city's transportation infrastructure, its inventory of parkland, and the number of affordable living choices within city limits. Charlottesville Tomorrow's recording begins with Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you all for coming today. Our primary focus today is going to be our capital improvement program budget and council priority initiatives. Ms. Bolgard, Mr. O'Connell, who wants to get us started?
Well, this is our proposed agenda for tonight. And our intent is to try to walk through every issue we know of that's a change, and go through in detail the capital improvement program, not just what's in there, but a comparison to a year ago, and try to clearly show you where changes have been made. A question got asked, and I think it's a good one. And we got a few charts to show you some trends over the last 5 years.
Since 2006.
In the capital improvement program, so you can kind of see what's happened over time, and where we are this year, and where we're probably heading in the next 2 or 3 years. And like we've done before, we got slides for every one of these and just kind of go through step by step. We have prepared at the end some of what we've heard about agencies, so if we have time, we could get into that or at least tee up. These are the questions or comments we've heard from counselors or at the public meeting, and which is the March 31st work session. If we don't have time, then at least we've teed up here. Do you have any other questions from that? And we've reserved in the last 15 minutes for public comment. So that's our agenda, if you're okay with that.
And in your binders, it's after the blue tab, call, and then we'll start with the Council Priority Initiatives tab. And there's some information you should have on that. And my voice is going in and out. I'm not feeling 100%, so I'll try not to breathe too much.
So before we start on that, I know you sent us a memo on the revenue, state revenue projections. Is there a bottom line in your mind on how the projections that we talked about last week and the projections now that there's some kind of the budget line up?
In terms of what we can expect to lose from the state?
Yeah. Or in terms of, just in, I think it's simply as in terms of the projected revenues that are in the budget, and now we now have some better sense from the state. How does that affect the budget?
We
lost $53,000.
Right. I haven't plugged them into the sheets yet, and we're still getting information on where the exact figures are. In fact, I just got compensation board numbers today.
Yeah,
but yeah, it still hasn't changed.
It's
still about the same. So we had in the proposed budget, we were losing about $890,000. Now we think we're going to lose about $940,000 when we take into consideration that we actually gained on the compensation board side. We gained in state aid for police protection, but we lost because of the $60 million in flex cuts they're going to put back in place. That netted to $50,000 loss. So that's all I know right now. The story hasn't changed since Monday. So.
And the other thing I guess I would point out from my reading of it is that a lot of what the state did for their budget, to balance their budget, was kind of the opposite of what I've seen Gary do year after year. And what Gary does year after year is make sure that our revenue forecast and our assumptions are very conservative. And I think that the state's assumptions that underlie the budget they just passed are based on revenue forecasts that have become rosier, you know, that they're projecting more money coming in.
Yeah.
They're assuming money from the federal government that hasn't been passed yet. They're borrowing money against the retirement system. So I think
They're not recognizing actual costs.
It just I think all of this just reinforces the importance of us having the kind of rainy day fund putting aside, because I think it unlikely all of the optimistic assumptions that the state has made in order to balance their budget are going to play out, which means they'll be hitting the colleges again later on.
And I think the consequence of that will be every quarter when they do their updates off of actual numbers, you'll start seeing newspaper stories in Richmond, and suddenly there'll be some shifts and changes. We'll have to see.
We have to look at the taxes.
The other thing I would raise with that, and Leslie may, I've not heard anything more, the fact that schools are getting $1.3 million, is that number still holding more?
So far as I know.
I think raises a question for council. How's the school board going to use that money? Because it's basically one-time money, and appropriately and focused. And I think that's worthy of some kind of discussion between the council and the school board. And I know they're having that discussion internally and share some of the same concerns.
Just to follow up David's comments, and I agree with his general analysis. That's why I think we really need to have more money in the rainy day fund than less. So we have to put $8 million. I feel we're going to need more in June.
The one thing about the $2.8 million, just to reinforce it, and we get into the capital projects, we have some things like a capital contingency with one-time money. And when you spend it, it's gone. The $2.8 million is a continuing amount of money every budget. I say that because I think it's, from a budgetary standpoint, that's even more conservative. And it's not sort of leveraging the future for today by building in some one-time monies, which the state has done a lot of, and I've seen a lot of counties doing the same kind of thing. But I think the discussion, I was really surprised that the state budget ended up where it did. You all heard the same stories I was hearing, and we were planning on some huge cuts. It didn't happen, but unless the economy gets real good in the state in the next year, their budget, they're going to have to start grappling with some of the issues they keep putting off.
And it may have been naive on our part to think that $50 million flex cuts was going to go away, but it wasn't in Kane's budget. But when McDonald reintroduced it, then it was pretty clear that they were going to grab that, and then they even increased it. So, that's pretty significant.
And that might be the way they do. If at a quarter the revenues fall off, that's an easy one for them to do. And they don't take the flak for cutting the sheriff's offices or schools or take your pick of the other things that they got criticized about.
Now that we have more money in sheriff's office and constitutional offices, does it mean that money which you're going to set aside for to make up for those, you'll have that money?
Well, it's a wash because they gave it in that area and then took it away in another one, and we end up actually $53,000 less.
Okay.
So for just the sheriff's office, yes, that's true, but when you add them all up, and they gave money here, and then they basically took it all away with this flex fund money.
And that's
money.
The part we don't have yet, how it's broken down, the gains and the losses. And
well, I have the constitutional officers and the state aid, the police protection is one line. Mm-hmm. On the flex cuts, there's different options there, and we can talk about that now or another time, but there were different areas of cuts that the budget office would give you. And you could either choose that or choose one area, or you could cut the state a check, which some localities actually did do. So that's an option. There's options there. I don't think we're going to know the areas for the budget to pass. As long as we put it in the budget somewhere, we're fine. So as long as we can cover ourselves when the time comes.
The other thing I would add, a few of those things are guesstimates, and BML is still doing a detailed analysis, and then they go to different departments within state government to get more numbers. So that number could change. We don't think it's going to change very much, but it could. And I think over the next 1 or 2 weeks, we'll start to get a number that they're saying is more solid. This is what it is.
I think certainly by the time it's time to finish up the budget, we'll be pretty close.
Any other before we get into the... We try to tee up with what we heard from council during the budget guidelines and the discussions we had leading up to the budget, a couple of the areas where you had an interest. One was transit. The other is to walk through the aquatics and pools budgets, because your facilities are coming online in this budget, and there's a revenue and expenditure side that we thought was important to walk through, and then you had a series of questions about that. So that was where we were going to start and then move through the rest of the agenda, if you're okay with that.
I wanted to quickly talk about this, that just to remind council that the Council Priority Initiatives funding is that pool of money that we put in the proposed budget every year. This year it's a $200,000. For 11, it's $200,000. And typically you've used that during this time when you're balancing the budget for your own adopted budget or during the fiscal year. And some of the uses have included outside agencies, any special initiatives you have, or program enhancements like transit you've done before. You haven't touched that yet, so just to remind you it's out there. And usually, like at the end, we'll tee up some agencies that you'd ask for additional information on. So that's a pool of money that you could fund those from. And then you've usually kind of held some portion of it for during the year. So I just wanted to remind you all of that.
And what is the current balance in that account?
I have that, and I can email it out. It's about $50,000 of it we put in from the 09 carryover for the 250th anniversary that you could use for that. There's more in it than that. I want to say it's $168,000 total with that $50,000 included. But I can send the spreadsheet out.
And that's available in the current
That's
year.
Right now, yeah.
And then this would be proposed July 1.
So whatever.
Is that because we had held back a big chunk of money for the position that had been recommended for the customer?
That was $60,000.
Efficiency.
Right. Dollar. And that's the $60,000 was in there too.
So that includes that.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of rolled up together right now.
Just while we're on that, we have in front of us this thing about the FY10 and how that was divided out, the SPCA and the QCC and workforce initiatives. Are those ongoing commitments?
No, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. So the future SPCA thing will
that's
come out
in the budget.
Already in the
mm-hmm.
budget. I thought it was correct.
Yeah. That was a special case that year. So.
And that's one of the bigger increases.
Yeah.
But that $200,000 that's in front of you for FY11 is not committed from a staff standpoint to anything. That's for council to support either during this budget discussion or during the year.
Right.
Something new that comes along or a program that but you want to fund to a greater extent.
Any other questions about this?
And just to add, because we're going to talk a lot tonight about capital projects, that's an ongoing source of money. It's not one-time money, that $200,000. Whereas when we get to talking about some of the capital projects, that money's programmed for a specific project, it in some cases it may only be available that one time. And it gets confusing as we go through the evening. Right?
Yeah.
At least that's been our experience in the past. We confuse
we'll
ourselves.
We'll try to confuse ourselves and others less and less.
Is this a place to talk about special initiatives?
We can do that now or at the end. We've got some things queued up at the end if you'd like. Or
if you'd like to talk about transit, we're teeing that up in just a minute.
Is there something else
okay.
you want to do?
Yeah.
We'll tee that up. Okay. Speaking of transit. This is the enhancement that's actually included in the budget right now. We took $110,000 in new money and increased the arrival times of three routes. Bill Watterson is here to talk to this or answer questions. I think this was also presented in a report not that long ago to council along with some other transit changes that were going to take place. Also in front of you tonight, I placed this memo that's dated today about a route proposal that just came up last week. Date March 17th to Judy Mueller. I just placed it right on top of your
Looks like
file.
This.
I've moved everything.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I should put things on bright colored
everything.
Paper and then say the red piece.
So one issue is within the proposed budget. Is funding
for this $110,000 to increase the headways on these three routes, built into the proposal that the staff has made to City Council. There's another issue, which is what this memo raises, of changes to be made in Greenbrier, which was a request that was made. And so I don't know if you want to talk about one and then get to the other, or both together, or how you want to handle that. But
well, first of all, are there any questions about the proposal that's in the budget itself?
Yeah, I have. I do.
And so Bill's here to answer your questions.
My concern, I guess, is that relates to the bus service in Greenbrier neighborhood, the transit service. And it seems very unfair to me, rather than at least very unscientific survey we've done by the neighborhood, that we think there's a demand for it. And there's the only part of the city which does not have any kind of transit service at this time, other than going to high school. Now, I wonder whether it is wise to add more service to the existing area and leave the city beach section of the city of Charlottesville without transit services in some fashion. So that's my question.
And the proposal that's in front of you, and Bill's going to need to talk about this, is efforts to try to look at the Greenbrier northerly section of the community, and can we change the route structure and the difficulties in trying to do that?
Let me make a comment on that also. This Route 9 could easily gain those 5 minutes by the route in the lower part goes from 9th and 10th, which is one block away. It is duplication. I think if you took out one of those sections, you could easily gain 5 minutes to get some service in Greenbrier.
Well, you want to get, I mean, you want to just walk through this? What we try to do as a staff to look at that?
Let's let Bill address.
Well, the logic that's found in this memo is a little different than I think what Councilor Hooja is referring to. So I'll do this first and then we can deal with that one. We set up Route 9 to include the high school in August of 2008, and there were actually conversations along these lines at that time about whether the end of the line should be the high school or whether it should be further north in the Greenbrier neighborhood. So some of these issues may seem familiar. That's because we have talked about them before. So what we tested in terms of loops is to not stop at the high school proper, where we set up a stop by Martin Luther King Center, but instead to just stay on Grove, go up to Melbourne, go Kenwood and Yorktown Drive back to Grove, to make a loop at the end of the route so that it can double back on itself and head back down the Rose Hill corridor. That is the most doable in terms of time schedule, but it would make a route that runs at 62 minutes round trip when we have a maximum of 60 minutes available. So what would happen during the course of the day is it would continue to deteriorate because 2 becomes 4, 4 becomes 6 as you do later laps. These other alternatives are not as workable from a schedule perspective. One would be to retain the stop that already exists at MLK and then to also do the loop I just described to you. That would take a little bit longer. The other one I would say is completely undoable, particularly when school lets out, because it would be trying to make the way across the parking lot, and I was at CHS just recently when school let out and learned once again how impossible that is. Plus, it takes much more time. So in trying to do this, to figure out a way, can we simply add another loop onto Route 9? Unfortunately, the answer is no. It would not allow us to run within the schedule that we have available. Now, theoretically, if there is some piece of Route 9 that gets removed and then that time becomes available to add a loop, that could be done. I haven't been able to identify something that I think would be sort of painless in terms of not having any constituents on the route that would want it. This particular route the year leading up to this route starting was a bit challenging because we had made some service adjustments, and the 10th and Page neighborhood in particular was commenting on the adjustments that we made. And so the issue of the bus running on both 10th and 9th Street was one that was very strong issue for the 10th and Page neighborhood. We also spoke to the Rose Hill neighborhood. We spoke to the Greenleaf neighborhood. We spoke to Charlottesville City Schools about the placement of the stop at Charlottesville High School. So this has been something of a delicate balancing act. One thing that isn't apparent from the map is that we are trying to go through the 10th and Page neighborhood as expediently as possible. So what we're actually doing is that when we are heading from Preston to Main Street, we're traveling on 10th Street. When we're traveling from Main Street to Preston, we're actually jogging off 10th Street at Page to go on 9th. We're not making any kind of a loop in the neighborhood. We're just using two different corridors to traverse the neighborhood, depending on which direction the bus is going.
The 62-minute suggestion, it's revenue neutral. It's just a different way of doing an existing loop. Is that accurate?
Correct. The idea is to add a loop without adding any expense.
I have a question that at the high school, I was a big proponent of putting a stop at the high school because at the time we had a foster daughter who worked at wanted to get a job at the mall and couldn't get a bus from the high school. I suspect that there are a lot of other students who are in similar circumstances, but I bet that they're not riding the bus at 10 o'clock in the morning or at 11 o'clock in the morning or at 1:30. And I'm wondering, is there any way to only have the high school stop during certain parts of the day so you don't lose 2 minutes throughout the day but just a couple of times? Or what's the ridership?
Yes, we could differentiate so that on certain trips we're going to the high school and other trips we're not going to the high school. That could be done.
Non-peak hour, for example.
At non-school hours.
Non-school
hours. Yeah, or during school. But do students come out of school in the middle of the day and take the bus?
Generally, no. I think it is very peaked service. The challenge is that even if we don't go into that stop, it doesn't make schedule.
Well, even in the 2 minutes?
Correct. The first option here is a 62-minute
round
trip.
Oh, that has a no-stop at the edge. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Okay, so that's...
Yeah. And it's thinking of doing it all day long, but you could do it as you were suggesting periodically.
So it seems to me that we're talking about the budget, and we're talking about whether to put more money into the proposed enhancements. And then secondarily, we're talking about whether to shift a route to provide service in Greenbrier. So it kind of seems to me that's a discussion we could have at a non-budget time, and that the budget issue is whether we want to do enhancements. Is that
a third alternative, which I think is an extension of this, is that you create a new route specifically to serve that broader neighborhood. What was the cost?
$195,000.
We've not been able to figure out how to work around the existing route, given the concerns that got expressed by other neighborhoods, which y'all were in the middle of, not just the staff, how you drop something else off to make the thing work. And we've been back and forth on this a number of different times. But there is an alternative. I mean, they've cost it out, and we can talk about it, of putting a whole new route in. And you can either do that on top of what's proposed here or add that to it.
Or you could do half route. Or you could do not a complete route, just do a one side of the loop. You can just not have a big route, but have a small route, which would be less.
I don't have to turn you off.
I'm not sure what was said. I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is, instead of having a 1 hour loop, just have a 30 minutes loop. And not go too far, just go a small amount of area.
Well, the expense is the bus and the driver, wherever you put it.
Didn't we used to do a demand response?
We do currently serve that neighborhood with what's called link service, and we contract with John to deliver it.
How often is it used?
It's very lightly used. A person that works here in City Hall is one of our most loyal customers of that service.
And are there options for expanding that service or publicizing it more widely so that more people are aware of it and likely to utilize it?
It could certainly be publicized more. that might generate more use. I've had some discussion in the past with Councilor Hooja, and that didn't seem to be the direction that there was interest in. So.
And it's not, it's you have to call ahead, what, 24 hours? It's
mainly
for somebody that's like scheduled to go to work every day and they just have a, you know, call in order. If it's a make a trip that's that morning, you decide to do it.
And is the fare comparable to the fare, basically?
The fare is the same.
CTSA fare.
Yes. Right in the button.
I haven't gotten any emails or calls or anybody asking for this. I mean, you live there, so you asked for it.
I sent you an email, all of you, the survey. This survey was done by Greenbrier Neighborhood.
Yes.
Yes, sir. And I do have received, at least maybe you all have received the same email, that very few people at high school are writing.
Yes, and that I did.
Could we, just to make sure we have all our options in front of us, could we talk for a minute about the purpose of these enhancements and what you would anticipate to gain from them? I mean, is there some science behind choosing these routes to have more frequency and, you know, projected increases in ridership because of, you know, can you talk
you're
a minute
about this
about
here.
This
the
yes.
headway increase in the headway
yes. There is some thoughtfulness behind it. These are neighborhood routes that are generating above average use. They're neighborhood routes that already have what's called peak service, so that Monday through Friday they are at 30-minute frequency in the morning and the afternoon. Midday, and then on Saturday, they're at hourly frequency. So we've sort of built more ridership than what we're typically getting on our neighborhood routes in these areas. And one of the things that is commonly asked for is more consistent, frequent service. So by filling in the donut hole and making service more frequent on Saturday by having it be every 30 instead of every hour, it will be more convenient service that people can be more comfortable to use as a more regular alternative.
That makes sense to you. I mean, what the evolution of this was, when we were putting the original budget together, there was not a proposal for the transit system to make changes. And we had the session with council, January. It was pretty clear to us as a staff that council had an interest, if we could figure out how to do it financially, to do some things to try to improve ridership. And Bill's approach was to take the routes that seemed to be generating the most ridership and have the potential to generate even more to do those. And it's more reasonably priced, and it affects three different routes, than adding a brand new route somewhere or doing some more dramatic stuff. So we added that into the budget fairly late in the game, trying to respond to council's interest in it.
Well, for me, I would prefer not to do any of this at this time. I wouldn't mind taking this amount of money and putting it into adding it to our downturn fund with the idea that that's two quarters. It turns out the government's right. The state money is increasing. There's not going to be a round of cuts facing us each quarter. I think, you know, enhancing transit is a great idea. But right now, I'm concerned about the money we're taking from the capital programs in order to have a balanced budget. And I would prefer not to enhance transit and not to take on a new route at this time.
Did we vote on this?
No.
We just talked about it.
And what we were hearing is council had an interest in looking. You know, they've got two levels of, for this budget, what can we put together quickly? And secondarily, there's the Charette Summit notion to really step back and relook at the whole system, which we're now planning on doing. When?
This summer.
This summer. We're working on it.
What is the status of the proposed route change that would serve Tandem School in that whole area?
Life support, I guess, is the way I'd characterize it. I got a pretty clear indication that council was not enthusiastic about that one. So what the intent was is actually to see the budget through and then to have neighborhood discussions on the route proposals. I think there were three others that there seemed to be interest in. So unless you want that to be continued for consideration, it really isn't being continued.
I was okay with it as long as it didn't reduce coverage in the city. And but it sounded like that may or may not have been possible. So.
I'm not sure that it's possible.
And I assume the county hasn't come forward with any funding to make that happen.
Not unless something happened today.
Set their tax rate at the same as today. So.
Well, the only argument I'll make is that any improvements we make that can allow people more choices on where to live, you know, just looking at residency as being something that is more affordable place that you can live without a car, and that. Takes cars off our streets. I wouldn't mind seeing us looking at that. I don't want to hurt service in a significant way. Wouldn't hurt me how bad it would hurt.
Yeah, it's fine with me if we keep it as an option for consideration when we revisit all these potential changes.
Okay.
As we talk about, you know, whether it's a priority or not, I think that we've talked quite a lot about the fact in every planning commission hearing that we hear about the parking, we hear about traffic, we hear about roads, we hear about all this other stuff, the infrastructure that we devote to cars versus the infrastructure that we devote to bikes and sidewalks. And I think that, Charlottesville has been generous with its buses, but I don't want us to nickel and dime out the idea of public transit is something that we say we're committed to. The thing I liked about these routes were that we could, with relatively little funding per route, make a huge difference to the people living along them. The problem I have with the Greenbrier route, which I also support in principle, but it's more of a funding problem to me because for a lot fewer people being served, it's a lot more money. So it's more per impact. And so to me, this seemed like a good way to start, but that's just...
Are there, I guess I'm sympathetic to David's proposal to...
Hold it.
Hold off for now. I'm not sure if I want to put it in the emergency downturn fund necessarily, but maybe hold it off for, designate it for transit improvements, and then come back... after the budget's been adopted.
And maybe there'll be ideas coming from the new charrette, which will be that time more useful.
And I agree with that. I'm kind of curious as to what's going to happen in the charrette. But even when you consider things, I'd much rather see a bus in Greenbrier than one thing in the we have to. You know, kind of pick a priority, or you have to pick one at least, kind of pilot, see what would be effective.
I don't want to push the issue, but I just wanted to. I wonder, do members feel is fair not to have a transit system in the north part of the town? Because otherwise, what happens is there are millions of families. And they're choice riders, and I think I can't predict how much the ridership will be unless it's marketed. It seems to me that the major gap in our service, we talk about traffic, energy, and all those things, so this is the option.
Could I ask this? For where we are right this minute, can we set the $110,000 into your priority reserve thing and put it on that list and then come back either at the end of tonight or at the next meeting?
Yeah.
And then you can say, save it for the charrette or... Or you could follow David's lead, but at least it sets it aside.
It makes more sense to put it there to me.
Then we can just designate it, for it you can use it, or you can undesignate it for future purposes.
And if you have to come back and look at it.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Okay.
And I guess in the meantime,
I'd be interested in knowing what can we do to advertise the jaunt service that's available and to see what we can do to market that as a viable way. It doesn't allow for spontaneity, but maybe people will use it for getting to work or for doctor's appointments or for other appointments when we need to come closer to the table.
There needs to be marketing done. I mean, very few people know that it exists.
And it might be something that needs to go out to the listserv of people that responded to your survey. We had a high response to that survey.
Okay.
And do we, I mean, one thing, do we want to kind of, as part of not spending this now, do we want to put a certain amount, slightly more in the budget for marketing of the bus?
Well, one of the good ideas about just lumping it in with the priority initiatives is that we already have, it sounds like we already have $360,000 in that account.
If you add the amount.
Right, plus 110, so we can pull more from that account if we decide the other improvements are warranted.
Especially if
you can do things this year sooner, with your money.
Like a marketing program.
Like a marketing program.
If transit needs the money for that.
You got money to do the
money.
I can't imagine that's
not that specific initiative, but yes, there is some money for promoting.
They
should be happy to have more.
And I just wanted to raise with you, because we're now doing it, the $160,000 is gone once you spend it. The $200,000 would stay in the budget for the future. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was going to follow Dave's comment on marketing. And I think we both have talked to this gentleman, I can't remember his name, Saltzman?
Randy Saltzman.
And I was very intrigued by the type of marketing he was suggesting. Of course, it costs money. Nothing is free. But it seems to me that it seemed to have worked in other places, probably worth exploring.
Well, I would love to weave that into the charrette somehow.
Yeah, I would agree.
And the one thing I was going to say for Kristen's benefit about the council initiatives funding is that whatever you don't spend in a certain year will carry over to the next year. It carries over.
Which also can respond to what David was talking about, being a reserve for the downturn in the economy or future state budget cuts.
Right. So you're covered.
All right, so let's move forward.
As part of the package that went out yesterday in an email, and then also you were given hard copies at your interviews last night, you received a memo from Brian about some questions that had been raised at the first budget work session about the aquatics facilities budgets, about the requirements of lifeguards in the pools, and a proposal to keep Pro open for special swim teams on a revenue neutral basis, should that be an interest. And just to remind council, there is no money in the proposal now to keep Pro open. So if that is an interest at this council, then we'll have to add in the expense and add in the revenues.
I missed it, sorry. One more time.
Okay, excuse me. If you are interested in keeping Pro Pool open for the special swim teams, then we'll need to amend the 11 budget because it's not in the budget for fiscal year 11.
Should we add to it and then the revenue will cover that?
Supposedly it'll be cross neutral, and I can let Brian speak more about that. But the memo you got, which hopefully you looked at, basically outlined the approach for 11, some information on how, on this, basically on the why swim team that's interested in keeping Crow Pool, having Crow Pool available as a swimming option. And then the rental cost analysis that would be required to keep Crow Pool at a cost neutral basis if that were to happen. And in terms of when Smith opens in a full year of honesty, while that's increased the aquatics budget by about $413,000, on the revenue side, you've got more revenues coming in. And total revenues for recreation about 433, so it's basically cost neutral.
Are those projections based upon, what are the projections based upon?
I'll let Brian speak to that specifically.
Our revenue projections are based upon what We have had, in terms of past experience, this past summer at all of our facilities, particularly at Honesty, where we had over 30,000 visits and almost $100,000 in revenue just in daily admissions to Honesty. We had our attendance and revenue at Washington Park. Attendance was pretty static compared to previous years in the 15,000 range over the course of the season. Revenues were up because we changed the rate structure. You can't really look at it, each pool, on an isolated basis about the money that comes in for daily admission and the direct expenditures, because we, last year, for the first time, sold a pass that was good for the entire summer at all of our facilities. And revenues from just pass sales alone was $190,000. We sold over, I think, 2,100 passes last year.
Do we have any kind of scholarship program where people who need help?
We established a student pass last year. It's good for anyone who's of school age that's a student, 18 and younger, within the city limits. If you're a resident, regardless of how your school, whether it's in the public school, at home, or a private school, you're eligible for that rating. It's $20 for the entire summer for any of the facilities. This year, that will be the preseason pass sale rate. We're trying to drive some revenues in the preseason to get people to make a commitment before our facilities open, and we have a slight discount on full season rate if you buy before we open for the year. Once we're open for the year, the pass rates go up slightly. And those are based around a daily admission price. If you bought a pass in the preseason and went 8 times over the course of the season, you paid for your pass. The regular season rates are based upon 10 visits. So our revenue projections on the outdoor pools are based upon our past experience and what we can project for a full season at Honesty. Smith is a different animal altogether in that the facility will be open year-round. And we kind of used relatively conservatively what we project daily attendance at Smith to be, both on the aquatics end and on the fitness end, and picked a number of what we expect our daily admission rates to be to project out the revenue over the course of the year.
With that Smith projection changed, we kept Crow open and rented it out?
I don't believe so. No, I think we will be, I think we're going to have, like we have had at Honesty, I think we're going to have capacity problems at Smith, which is a good problem.
It's a good problem.
The proposal for Crow that I've laid out that you've all seen is a mechanism to meet the desires of the Y swim team on a cost-neutral basis. And I've presented this information to them. We've actually scheduled a meeting with them next week where they're going to kind of respond to what we proposed. I just want to point out that the Y currently pays a negotiated rate of $10 per lane hour. Our published rate is actually $11. Their rate is then discounted by the percentage of team members that are on the Y team that are city residents. And currently that number is 17.5%. So the great majority of swimmers on that team are non-city residents. So we have effectively been subsidizing the program for quite some time at a pretty healthy amount. I do not know how the Y is going to respond to this, and the lane rental rate of $20.20 per hour is what it would cost us to host the program. If more than one team came together, they would be able to share that cost.
What's not in here is, I mean, currently they rent time from us.
Yes.
What hours, how many hours a day, how many hours a week? How many lanes typically at a time? Can you give some?
Sure. They rent 24 hours a week, which equates to about 111 lane hours per week. There are 6 lanes in the pool. Every evening, Monday through Friday, they have the entire pool. Some days it's 2 hours, some days it's 3. In the mornings, they rent 3 lanes on 3 days a week, and then there's also time on Saturdays. Their rental alone is 25% of the available time.
Is Crow Pool in physically a good condition? Is it manageable?
It's well reclaimed.
The building envelope is very poor. Utilities costs are high. I mean, this is, to me personally, frightening. In the pump room, if you go down in the pump room and put your hand on the wall that is the concrete, on the other side of that wall is the deep end of the pool. That concrete is damp. So, I mean, it is damp to the touch. We've had the pump rooms flooded numerous times, not from the pool, but from other reasons. The locker rooms we had intended to renovate a couple of years ago, and then when the decision was made to consolidate, we did not spend that money. It is not in good shape.
Two questions. First of all, what are the alternatives for the Y Club other than Crow Pool? Are there other alternatives? And B, as I understand it, the budget here that whereby you came up with the $20 an hour lane assumes that we're keeping it open year round. Do they only need it in certain times of the year, or do they use it year round?
Well, the way I projected this out was we took our actual annual utilities cost for the year, divided by 365, so came up with a number per day, because you have to pay for the utilities whether you're open or not. If they come Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you still have to run the place Tuesday, Thursday. And then computed actual guard costs based upon the amount of time that the Y team has been in the pool over like the past three seasons. So an average of the amount of time they're actually in the pool. So that would give them a direct cost of you're paying only for the guards when you are there. There is a percentage of cost for our aquatic facility operator, our maintenance person who'll have to spend probably 15 to 20% of his time in there, and then there's associated chemicals. So that's how we computed it, and then divided it by the average number of lane hour rentals that they've had.
And they use it during the summer as well?
No. No, generally their program goes outdoors in the summer. It's
so fall, would you just close winter, the facility spring. Completely in the summer?
Well, I think at that point our Smith would be open by next summer. I'm not sure when the Y facility will be open. Then you just have to consider that.
What are
run Crow during the summer at at just a reduced level, turn the temperatures down, that kind of thing. We could clean it, take the water down and clean it.
What are their alternatives?
They have other alternatives available to them, within the region. I'm not sure how far they have pursued them. Their Y team coach is associated with the university. That's a potential option.
Have they asked for this service? Are they asking us this?
Yes.
And currently they're using Crow.
Yes.
But they wouldn't be able to continue on in the same type of program at Smith?
Not at the level in which they're getting today. Those lane hours we're going to be using for our own programming for Learn to Swim. There's relationships with the Boys and Girls Club, which is going to be right next door. So actually, if they are amenable to this solution, it frees us up at Smith to be conducting more of our own programs and frees the facility up for daily admission use, which is a bigger revenue driver for us.
Would it be better for us if they found somewhere else? Or does it not matter to you?
It would be best for us if they had their own building, which they're about to build.
But I know, but in the meantime, for them to...
Well, it's cost neutral for us. That's the idea.
The other question would be...
A lot of money for them to raise, then.
I know, but that's on them. That's not on them.
Yeah, their experience has been they'll be coming back trying to negotiate. You add to this, but my experience over a long time is they try to negotiate, they try to get discounts, they won't pay full cost, so you need to be clear it's full cost.
We were very clear with them that we would entertain the idea only if it didn't cost us a penny.
Well, the other part of this is we have community members who would also like to see there be some hours available at Crow. Who feel like right now there's just not enough lanes available for adult lap swim in the morning and in the evenings. And so I'd be amenable to something where the cost goes down, if we could create a scenario where the cost goes down some per lane hour and allows us to have three lanes in the morning that are also open to
recreational lap swimmers in the same time period. We have lifeguards there already. We have and we have an hour or two on at the end of the day, so there's also some additional time allowed for recreational lap swim. We put a modest amount of money into it, and that might allow their cost per lane hour to come down a little bit in our community of people who are very interested. I mean, you met with some representatives, have more, there's just not enough space at this point in time for swimming. So I don't know if that, and I also, it seems to me, if you could close this during the summer, you mean the annual utilities cost number goes down if you're not heating the water, you're not heating the air, or whatever, I don't know what else, what, you're not replenishing the water.
Well, you may want to think about a timing issue of Smith opens
September.
So for the lap swimmers, they wouldn't have access to a city pool indoors if we closed Kroger in the summer. So you might do an interim period or something, is what I'm suggesting. Yeah. Or
well, I think interestingly enough, to respond to those concerns and needs about there not being enough lap swim time, the reason for that is a great portion of that is this program, which takes up that space in the pool. If we go this route and are able to cover our costs and Y stays at Crow, that lap swim time is available by default at Smith. Okay.
What about the gap that Gary just, the gap between
the summer?
In the summer.
Well, the summer, the
pros will
stay open until Smith
opens. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so Pro doesn't close as of the end of this fiscal year. It closes when Smith opens.
Correct.
And that's factored into your budget already.
Do you see that working? This can you, off the top of your head, if you follow David's suggestion of trying to set an amount of money aside to cover city swimmer, flat swimmers?
He said that there'll be room.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought that through. The fact that one of the reasons that adult lap swimmers have an issue is because the time is taken up and lanes are taken up by.
Well, they'll have an issue about location.
Yeah, I mean,
I've been in both those pools for years swimming, and the location, as long as it's open, they're fans of Crow because it's close. So.
Well, isn't it also an option that a group of swimmers could pay to utilize Crow and thus help bring down the cost to the Y?
Certainly. I mean, I computed this to be the cost based upon the Y's usage in order to provide them a realistic number of what it would cost them was their program. If others get together and band together, then that number is the number. It would just be shared between one or more groups.
So if you had a group of private citizens that wanted to continue to use Crow, if they got together, worked out a deal with you or the Y, then that could happen.
And do we have is there a timeline when the Y will be open?
The Y is, they are currently in the design development phase of putting their construction drawings together. I'd say they're probably 30 or 40% of the way through that. They're probably going to be finished in May, maybe in June. At that point, it's the Y's decision. Once their construction documents are done, the project's ready to be bid. That's
12,
a money
18
issue.
Months construction?
At a minimum, an 18-month construction window.
So you're looking 2 years probably before best scenario they're in the water?
Probably.
So a year and a half
from the summer.
So from a budget standpoint, if I'm hearing you right, it's guidance to Brian, but we're not making changes financially within the budget. It's what we can work out for the Y swimming program. Well, we would just do that as an appropriation when the deal's negotiated.
Yeah, you could do it then if you're not going to know whether. Yeah, if you don't know from the Y, or if there could be a decision made later. He's absolutely right. That would appropriate the funds.
I don't think it's realistic to anticipate that I'll have a final agreement by the time the budget is scheduled to be adopted.
So you could do that during.
Does that make sense as a place to leave it? Then he can, I think he's got some clarity about how to do it. Bring it back to council with who's out of work financially and you appropriate the money to keep it going. And Drop Dead is not until Smith opens in September, so you've got a number of months to work it out. Right?
Yes, sure. Absolutely. The only unknown is if we have major mechanical failure at Crow after Smith opens, like how we deal with that.
You write in that you have the right to close it that day.
Yes. Well, I think we also, I'm sure you're doing this already, but also need to encourage them to keep their options open.
I have.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that answer the questions about the Smith money, too? Because it has an appearance of being a lot of new money when it's, you look at both sides of the equation, it actually generates a little new money.
Just to kind of back up a little bit, going into the budget preparation season this past year for our department's budget across all of our cost centers, I think as I mentioned last week, we took a bit of a different approach in that I challenged each of our cost center managers across the department, whether it's therapeutics, aquatics, athletics, to do their own individual revenue projections for their programs, and to really focus their efforts around revenue generation and how that can be done and how they can, we can offset more of our operational costs through revenue, whether it be through programs, registration fees for athletic teams, tournaments, adult softball, et cetera. Our staff did an excellent job. We give them a lot of credit for answering the bell when it came to generating their own revenue estimates. And those are shown individually in each cost center in the budget this year for the first time. On the expenditure side, knowing the changes that were going to happen in the aquatics cost center alone, we looked at the entire budget in a way to ensure that the net cost to the city when we were done was either zero or less. And so the revenue projections played a big part in that. We looked at other cost centers where budget projections didn't match up with our annual actual costs over time, looking back the past 3 or 4 years, particularly in the parks cost center. And we were able to strategically shift money within the department across cost centers to make up for the needs in the aquatic side, some things in therapeutics, additional transportation costs for our youth summer camp programs, and make it all work. I think that's the important story to tell, in that we did look at this across the board departmentally and not just focused on aquatics. It is a real strategic realignment of our budget. Zekos had some questions about some specific line items, and those were actually transfers from one cost center to another. And most of the ones that you questioned have specifically to do with aligning the costs associated with our program guide, our triannual program guide, into the cost center where the guy who's in charge of the program guide manages that cost center. Actually, we'll pass this around. This is our new program guide that will be out in about 2.5 weeks. This is just the front and the back cover. It's a major change, shift from the way the document's been produced in the past. And we're very confident about how this is going to help us both drive revenues and grow participation. In the past several years, the program guide has been distributed through Seville weekly. Through a contract we had with them for production and distribution of the guide. It also had a lot of paid advertisements in it, so Siebel made some of their money on the deal. With the arrangement we have now, we're not going to be distributing the guide through the Siebel any longer. We've contracted with a local design group. It's two young ladies who helped us with the design of the brochure. And there's some additional costs per issue, between $1,500 and $2,000 per issue to produce the guide. But most importantly, we are going to direct mail the magazine to everyone who has conducted business with us over the past 3 years. whether you've rented a picnic shelter, taken a program, come to an event, if we have a contact with you in our database, you're going to receive this in the mail directly. It's also going to go directly to every resident and every housing site, and as we have always done, distributed within the schools and the libraries. So I'm really excited about this. Our design firm has done a great job. They've really gotten it when it comes to us trying to tell our message and tell our story. And it's not just a catalog of classes. It's telling the story about the park improvements that are going on, our natural resource management efforts, and so forth. So just to answer those specific questions that you have.
Any other aquatic or parks and recreation kind of questions since Brian's up? The next area we're going to move into is solid waste. And as you know, this is in a bit of a transition with your work session coming up in late April. But I guess between Leslie and Judy, we'll just walk you through. I wanted to be sure you understood what's proposed in the budget as best as we know it. Give you flexibility when you look at the Urbana Solid Waste Authority and we look at the McIntyre Recycling Center and the contracts that we have. So maybe you start, Leslie, just go through the points
sure.
and jump into it.
There's two main areas. The one is the landfill remediation, which is that big number that's in the budget every year. We actually were able to reduce that by $250,000, so it has a budget of $500,011. We did that by looking. Judy was reviewed some expenditure needs for 10 and 11. There is a landfill reserve that is dedicated for this purpose, and it was decided that we would have sufficient funds in that reserve if we needed them in 11, if we reduce this budget down to 500,000.
Let me just add to that. When we were building the landfill reserve, it's when we thought the remediation was going to be more complicated, more difficult, and more expensive. And every year we've gotten into it, that's not been the case. It's gone better than anybody imagined. It's been less expensive. It's not as intrusive, so on and so forth. So we think it's appropriate to look at the reserve funds that are there. That's a legal commitment that the city and the county have. But the overall 30-year project and costs are dramatically cheaper than anybody imagined. So we built that money up during this thing was going to ring true in a lot of ways, during good times, and we don't think we need it.
And how big is the reserve?
2.2 million.
Okay. And so we're taking 250 out of it now?
Not out of the reserve, out of just the contribution from the general fund next year. Each year, the general fund, we budget in the general fund for landfill remediation. So that 250 is coming off of that, not the reserve.
So it's not going into the reserve?
Right. Whatever we exactly. So each year we have a contribution. And somebody else can help me explain this. If whatever we don't spend out of that contribution each year goes into that reserve. That's how the reserve's been built up because we haven't been spending down what we've budgeted.
So like, for example, what did we spend this year? What has been our contribution this year or last year?
I think it's about $750. And I have one more payment. I have my last quarterly payment to make April 1.
And as we get into the bigger issue about RSWA, where we go in the future, that's there for you to look at as a piece of the solution. And what specific costs do you need to set aside to meet the future remediation cost?
So our anticipated cost next for fiscal year 11, our payment for remediation is expected to be?
$500,000.
We originally budgeted $750,000. Mm-hmm. Fiscal year 10, our actual payment is going to be $750,000.
Well, one of the problems is we have to go by what their budget is, and they're never anywhere near their budget. Never. And so when I talk with the county and I talk with the Urbana, what we did last year is we told them, this is how much money we have in our budget. Don't go spending more than that because we don't, neither one of us have it. And you know, we're doing a lot of the future work depends on the regular testing that we're doing and what those test results say about how quickly, you know, monkey, how quickly are the bugs eating up some of the bad stuff that's under there, you know. Give me an idea. So the budgets change every year. They haven't even done their budget for next year, so we're having to work off the estimates that they're giving us. I'm comfortable with this number.
Just to add to that, with you sitting on the Solid Waste Authority Board, there's a reserve within Urbana that city and county funds that will be debated as well. That's all towards this remediation. And one of the strategies that the county had was to raise that money to help balance their budgets. So that becomes an issue when you get to the Urbana level as well, just while we're on this topic. Okay. Got it. To warn you or set you up or however you want to look at that.
If you remember, our agreement with Urbana ends June 30th this year.
And that brings us to the next bullets down.
Does that make sense? I mean, we just don't see the...
And Judy segued well into the next issue of the recycling and trash. And we saw a savings of $248,000 going into 11. That proposes that we'll end the contract with RSWA and Republic in June. In terms of the recycling center, and Judy can obviously speak more to this, no decision's been made. You all have a work session next month about these very issues. If we were not to be part of the recycling center, there are very few things that we don't take curbside that we could offer bins at the yard or bins around town or something to help citizens for those items that they can't recycle curbside, or give them locations like to take batteries, because a lot of electronic stores take batteries and things like that. And so that was where the $248 in savings came from. And as, again, as you go into your work session next month, this will become a bigger topic at that point.
So you're saying that this $248 came because you may not have a recycling center, is that what you're saying?
You connected the two at the end, but I don't think you connected them at the beginning.
You want to let Judy
disconnect. I'll let Judy explain it then.
It's not
come June, that we will no longer be paying the service contribution
fee.
That's it.
And it's that fee that has historically funded all of the programs that Urbana provides. The city and the county need to make a decision on whether or not to keep the McIntyre Recycling Center open. There are very few, as Leslie said, there's very few things that the recycling center takes that our curbside program doesn't take. Small batteries, fluorescent light tubes, CFLs, cell phones, digital cameras. We can make arrangements for these things. At this point, we don't know what the cost of keeping McIntyre Recycling Center open is going to be, because Urbana hadn't gotten there.
Yeah. Well, so the last bullet's really not a budget issue for now, but there's implications of what happens with Urbana for
right.
The budget.
And the decision that you as a council would make is depending on what it's going to cost to run the recycling center, do you want to contribute?
Yeah.
And so, at this point, we don't know what the county wants to do. I mean, that's really their only option at this point for their customers. And they haven't made a decision on what they're going to do. So I can't even tell you what McIntyre Recycling Center could look like.
So if we decide to keep McIntyre open, we're going to have to find some portion of that $248 to use it.
Yes. We don't know what that is.
But I can't tell you what it is because they don't know.
Well, if after June we continue to be part of RSWA,
yes.
There will probably be a cost associated with being part of the Solid Waste Authority, because there will no longer be a revenue stream from service contribution fees, both what we've been paying and other people in the community have been paying. So there, and the county knows that too. I mean, the cost to the county will be there. Right. And so I think it's going to be, that argues against, looking hard at what utility there is. And we have a work session coming up on that, right?
And we hope to have the numbers for you at that point.
You also will have information about where the county is in their budgeting, which is another factor.
And the landfill is tied to this also.
But the other part of it is the McIntyre Recycling Center is just intermersed in the cost of Urbana. That's not like a separate line.
That's why they can't give us the number.
But the other part of it is, I think, just to make the picture complete, is while it's true that we can curbside recycle most of the things we recycle, we still have a significant percentage of people who go to the recycling center are city residents. I mean, the surveys continue to show, 30%? You probably might know better than I do.
Yes, about 30.
About 30? So, I go there, but yeah. The three of us do. So,
you're going to pay $250,000 for three of you?
That's not a bus route.
Yeah,
I'd
buy a bus route.
All the bus routes that one of us
could use. All I was pointing out is that I didn't want the picture to be that we don't use a recycling center because all of us do curbside. I think that's not an accurate picture.
And another question that I had about that, which is probably, you can tell me if this is better asked when we have that work session, but my impression is that when you put all of your recycling in a bin and you put it out in the rain, that like copy paper and stuff like that can't be recycled at the same level as it could have been had you taken it.
Well, it can be recycled. The level varies with how well it's
done. Actually,
save a few leaf bags and put a leaf bag on top.
But if the if the pop flows out of the plastic bottles and it's more likely to get mushed up than it's pre-sorted.
But the reality is the copy paper can't be recycled at the curbside anyway, other than being recycled as a lower grade of paper.
I know, and that's one thing they do have there.
Yeah.
So it's the copy paper that I'm...
From a budget standpoint, as we are setting money aside in the reserve we were talking about a minute ago, I don't know what the right number is, but we either reduce that savings or set something aside so you can come back in your work session and not be creating new money. And I don't know if Judy's got a thought about what a target would be. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in the April work session and having to find money in the budget a month later than this. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, so we have potential. We have money we need to be spending that might approximate the savings listed there.
Or some part of it.
I certainly would hope it not be that much.
But
what's so realistic?
$100,000.
In other words, right now, so the way the current budget is, it doesn't really allow for the contingency that we have to continue to support.
We have to pull it out of our reserves or find some other source.
Or reduce that savings and then reduce
it.
Budget, if we adopt the budget that you have proposed, it will not have any contingency in it for continuing to be part of Urbana.
Fairness, I think there is some built into my budget because, again, I don't know what my tip fee is going to be July 1.
I would say yes. And I guess I would encourage you to at least set something aside and tag it for this purpose so you give yourself flexibility.
So I heard a proposal to set aside $100,000, and then we can revisit that at the work session. Does that sound agreeable?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And has the county signaled at all in their budget how they intend to proceed in this regard?
No.
Does their budget contain any potential funding for?
Their budget contains funding, but they need to look at if they're going to keep Ivy open. Our commitment to Ivy is only remediation.
Yeah.
We don't use it. And, our citizens, and some of them do use it, they have the option of a large item pickup. I've told the county that if they want to continue Ivy in some manner and they want to tag some kind of higher rate for a citizen to pay if they really want to you know, put things in their truck and take it out there, that's fine. But I don't think that we should be paying for the cost of ivy, except for remediation.
All right, okay. Let's move on.
Moving on. Okay. That we're now into the capital improvement program. Yeah.
620, just to remind you.
620, okay. So I'm going to talk really fast. But I wanted to show some charts in the beginning, just to give everybody a history of kind of where the CIP funding has gone. And this, let me use my little mouse here, this starts in 2006. This is just the general fund contribution to the capital program from 2006 to 2011. And this dark blue line is what actually happened. Now, given these 2 years, I have an arrow here that says general fund, fund balance excess is what that should say. But basically, it was funds that you put in to the CIPs at that time that were fund balance excess funds from year-end excess. And you can see, the point of the slide is to show how much we did during these 2 years when we had the money to do it. If we had not been able to put those funds in, our CIPs would have looked more like this, just the general fund contribution, pretty flat, and then it starts to go back down. The next slide is even more telling. This is the total CIP program for these 5 years. Now, 11 does not include the state and federal money for the interchange, because that's state and federal, so I took that out. But here's what we did. Here's 8 and 9. Again, these are the fund balance excess dollars. Here's about what our CIP would have looked like without those dollars. And here's some of the big things we were able to do during those years, including the pools we were just talking about. Remember, we purchased all that public safety equipment. We established the housing fund. We made significant increases in new sidewalks. We started ADA improvements. These are just a few of the big dollars. I mean, these are millions of dollars. Tens of millions of dollars, probably, in new projects that we were fortunate enough to do and were smart to do at the time when we knew we were going to have it, and we put a lot of one-time money into it, which was the right thing to do.
Forestville Spark is another one.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is just a partial list. And then, of course, in 10, we started slowing back down, as we should have. And in 11, when you take that interchange money out, it's even less. So, again, looking at this from a budgeting strategy, when we saw that things were starting to go the other way, we did the right thing and started bringing our CIP back down, just like you saw on the other slide with the general fund contribution. So I just wanted to start the conversation kind of showing those neat charts to say, you know, our strategy over time has been when the times were good, we put the money to one-time use as we was the smart thing to do, and now we're backing off because we know that those one-time funds have dried up. And we don't know when we're going to start seeing things come back again.
I think the other thing to add there is we did a number of things in these facilities and in current facilities, energy efficiency, conservation measures, those kinds of things, that also were cost savings in our operating budgets. So we had that in addition to some of these projects as well.
Right. Now, part of the package I sent out yesterday, there were three things that you received. The first was looking at when council adopted the budget in 10, what projected 11 looked like compared to what the proposed 11 looked like. So you should have that, and hopefully you had a chance to look at it. And when we get to stormwater and the home energy program, we'll talk more in detail about those programs as well. But as we typically have done, what I would like to do is go through each section of the capital improvement program. I don't have the projected 11 up here, but I can at least talk to it, or you can look at your sheet to see how that compared. I do have the adopted figure in here. So if it's okay, we'll just kind of proceed with going through each slide and looking at the different programs. If there's something you have a question about in particular, then stop us and somebody on staff. You've got Jim, who does most of the CIP projects, I think, could answer some questions, and some other staff who could as well. So you're starting out with revenues. And let me just point out, I already mentioned here's our general fund contribution. That has decreased by over $300,000. The biggest increase here, obviously, are this federal-state highway. state funds for the interchange, and that's clearly the largest increase. The reason these are in here is when we are now managing these First Cities, what is it called, Urban Road
Urban
Money?
Construction Initiative.
That's it. So we now manage these funds, and this is the first project where that's occurring. So as more projects come online that are like this, you'll start seeing more of this. But this is the first one of those kinds. We've got a bond issue in calendar year 11, $6.9 million, and that actually equals the projects that we'll be doing that are bonded.
Leslie, this is sort of a trivial question, but assuming we actually receive that cash, federal and state cash, in FY11, chances are it's not going to be spent until FY13, mm-hmm. maybe?
Well, you don't receive it early.
That's what I'm getting at. So
can't make interest on
it. It's reimbursed. It's a reimbursable.
Right. We don't actually get it until after we spend it. We get reimbursed.
So why is it programmed for this fiscal year? We're not.
Because we can't initiate a contract unless the money is in the budget. So
okay.
It's like any grant project. We have to go ahead and appropriate it. Okay.
What's not on here, but just if you could address, is the Levy Building. It was projected that we'd get $212,000. I don't know.
Sure.
So what is that about?
That's vacant right now, isn't it?
Yes.
So there's no projects going on over there currently. Yep. Once the JDR folks moved out and the county moved their folks out, there's nobody in that building except storage, I think. Are there storage?
The county has one room that they're utilizing for storage.
So there's nothing going on at that building.
But we do not own the building.
We co-own it with the county, correct?
We do?
Yes. We own it jointly with the county.
And the intent, longer term, was to do a renovation in that building for the courts and the city and county to do that together. And there's a study. Is it underway yet or being debated?
No, it will be finished very shortly.
That looks at the use of that building and all the courts in that area.
Okay. Curious.
Are there
on the bottom of the revenues here, I'm looking at it.
Okay. These are just revenues. Are there any other questions about revenues before we go on to expenditures? Now we start with bondable expenditures. This is education and facilities capital projects. These are every year. We have the lump sum to schools, which increases 3% a year. The HVAC replacement, which we actually reduced from the projected 11 by 250. That was mainly to help balance the CIP, and they adjusted their replacement schedule accordingly. Yes?
If we back up a second, I was just... If we look at the bigger picture of the previous slide, mm-hmm. We're looking at a 2.5 times bond issue for next year compared to this year. Is there a reason why there's a big jump there? Fiscal year 12,
yes,
16,000.
Yes, because
16,
there's
9.
8 million in for the Fontaine that was added that wasn't in 12 last year. That's why. When we get down to that, I'll show you that's the difference.
That's the fire station.
It's the fire station.
Which was going to be split.
We've lumped it all together now.
Why did we not keep it split?
Well, the schedule on the project with where we are with design and get to a point of construction is a year later than this year, practically.
Exactly.
So you could put it there this year, but it just seemed to make
you'd be paying for the
you'd
money.
Be paying for it yeah. and
right.
sitting there for a year.
That's the main reason.
And it's a little bit Old Lynchburg Road is similar logic.
That's the other one.
By the time we go through all the design and whatever and get to a point of bid to be able to start the project, we're going to be a year later than what the budget's showing. We also sometimes pull bond issues together depending on the timing.
Okay. The one on here that is new that wasn't in the projected last year is the Market Street parking garage concrete repairs. I guess there's some pretty serious issues that need to be dealt with over there that obviously we could have projected out last year at this time, but I guess a come to light in the last year that need to be addressed. And obviously, they're pretty expensive, $594,000.
Are they going to be covered by the revenues from Market Street?
Well, if people would park, our revenues are actually going down, we're projecting. So the answer to that is no.
You want to speak in more detail on
that? Yeah, I'll review
it. Well, I think this is structural work that needs to be done. However, we take in a significant amount of money each year on parking revenues that is actually more than this figure. So I think if you're, you know, if you look at it clearly each year, the general fund gets a benefit of more parking revenues than this actual cost. This work needs to be done to really protect that revenue stream for future years. It's really critical. It's gotten to some of the rebar inside the concrete is corroded and deteriorating when you get to work for it.
And my point was that when we did the CIP last year, it was not in there, so this was new money that we had to add, which is pretty big dollars. Are there any other questions about education or facilities, capital projects? Okay. Then, excuse me. Yes?
We'll just go back to the schools just to show that. And there was, I've heard some people say the capital funds to the schools, but it's, we had specific projects at the high school. But this does not take into account as any like structural changes the schools may make, grade alignment or use of buildings or any of those other things. This is kind of status quo.
So the
put that on the back burner. So
did the HVAC replacement come in under budget? Is that why that was reduced?
No, well, that, no. It was reduced, one, as just to help balance the CIP. And basically, they're not spending all that money in 1 year. They're doing replacement as it comes along. And they're trying to put up, the purpose of this when it was set up was to have a replacement plan in place so that you wouldn't be spending huge amounts of money and spiking in years where you need to replace a bunch of equipment. And then you have a new year when you don't replace any, but doing more of what they do for the city buildings, which is replace things over time and have them on a schedule to make sure that they don't, they're not breaking, and we're not doing a lot of emergency repairs and trying to be more proactive. So I don't think they're spending down the money all every year. So we felt comfortable in talking to them that we could reduce it and they could just do some adjustment. This is only the second year we've done this. 10 was the first that we set it up. So
even though it says city schools, the city facilities management staff that works for Public Works manages this account. And it goes to the Capital Improvements Committee to discuss it as well.
Any other questions on this page?
And I'll point out, just for next year, the football bleachers are in there, and there's some safety issues with that, and that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's very expensive for bleachers. I mean, I don't know what all goes in building bleachers, but it sounds like it's,
you don't have to make any decision on this, but just
no, you're not appropriate.
Next
yeah,
year,
don't worry. Maybe it'll come in less next year. Who knows? Okay. All right. Next section's on bonded public safety and justice and transportation. Here's the $8 million, David, I was talking about. And last year at this time, we had it split out, and now the $8 million, that's showing the spike in that bonded that bond. There's really nothing, because of that, it's zeroed out for 11. Yes, sir?
Are you finishing with your comments on that?
On public safety and justice?
Yeah.
Sure.
I have a question about the mall renovation. Jim, explain what that renovation is?
At the Omni?
Yeah.
The Omni?
More renovations at the Omni? Can you explain that?
Both of you were talking.
The mall renovations at the Omni?
That's to finish the area from that we didn't do last year, basically from in front of the ice park all the way up to Water Street.
Well, reason we didn't do it, I thought, because it was in good shape.
It's not in good shape. Go walk it.
I did. I haven't been recently.
It was good more recently, but if you go up there and look at it, it really shows up now since we did the other portion, and it's in very bad shape.
I mean, it's cracking, breaking up. It's as bad as any part of the mall.
I'd like to go and look at it again.
Yeah, I went up there with this in mind, and I had gone up when the last year's budget came out for the same reason, and it seems like it certainly needs some repair, but it's so much newer. It seems like a year that we might defer.
I mean, it's one of those that to get into repair, you basically have to take up all the existing bricks, and by the time you start, it's like a patchwork of those problem areas. Be better to just take them all up and replace them. I mean, it's one of those. Maybe we need to show you some pictures or do or a tour or something, and maybe you set it on a list of want to question it and come back to it. But
well, I share the skepticism on that. It'd be nice to get it done at some point, but in terms of priorities, we're weighing all the priorities against each other, that's one in my mind would be a lower priority than maybe some other things. But
let me point you to the opposite one, street reconstruction. And we'll walk through this a minute, Leslie, because it jumps up. But it's,
okay.
There's some logic behind it.
So this jumps up quite a bit from what was adopted in 10. The reason for this, though, is in years past, and none of us know why, 500,000 of this has been budgeted in the general fund in streets and sidewalks, and then a transfer was done to the CIP. We eliminated that step and just put all the money in the CIP for 11 and future years. So it's the same amount of funding as they've always received, but it just starts in one pot, and finance doesn't have to do a transfer.
So that was streets and sidewalks? Or
excuse me, street reconstruction.
But does that mean you're making it all bondable as opposed to some of it came from the general fund?
Yes, it's always that the larger portion's always been bondable, and we couldn't understand why even a portion of it was in the general fund before.
So this is a way of reducing
$500,000
from the general
fund. It did reduce their budget by half. Yeah, the streets and sidewalks budget, which is where it was before. That's why it's sidewalks.
But because you make a transfer out of the operating budget to the capital fund, it's basically a wash.
Yeah, it really is a wash. So it reduced the operating budget of that department, but then on the other end you had to...
In the big scheme of the budget, it's a wash. You have $500,000 over here, and it's moving over here.
But I see what you're saying, because we bonded it, so it's still... So it's not, it wasn't that we increased the general fund contribution because we decided to bond all of it. We're not paying.
So where does the money, I mean, how can you do both? How can you bond it and also have it be transferred from a department? I don't
understand. No.
Well, you're reducing the departmental budget by $500,000. You're increasing this roughly
But so, you're right.
So you're saving the general fund $500,000 by doing
We did that. Save because we didn't increase the contribution to the CIP by that amount because we bonded the entire amount.
But to complicate another step, you within the operating budget have to set money aside for the bonds, for the debt service for this particular project.
Yeah,
so there's
but it wasn't
some enough. Savings, but
at some point someone can point us to the department that's now got $500,000.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
And that's,
yes.
And that's in public works.
Yes.
It's public service.
It's streets and sidewalks.
Okay.
But this isn't coming out of sidewalks. It's just the street department.
It's just their operational budget. It's just called streets and sidewalks. And that just happens.
It's coming out of an account that was paid for paving.
That was used for
when
streets.
We talk about street reconstruction. This is mostly paving.
Right.
For streets.
But that money in particular from that general fund budget was just for this. And literally they did a transfer from one fund to another. For reasons we can't explain.
So it was handy to be able to balance the overall general fund budget to be able to take this $500,000 and not have
it
to be appropriated.
That's part of it. Part of it is it just never made sense if they split. There were some accounting issues. The next one I want to point out too, the Old Lynchburg Road, just so you see it, we pushed that out a year primarily just like the fire station because of where we are with design and so on and so forth, and by the time we get to bidding it, et cetera. And it was a spread out over 3 years, always project. But I know you've gotten some emails about this, and I just wanted to make sure you see that. I don't think.
Basically, you're saying that project will not be ready to be constructed, and so there's no need to put money in. Basically.
Yes. Plus, it was always to be phased in over a couple of years.
But we're not suspending design work on Old Lynchburg Road.
We had slowed it down, and I asked the staff to keep going. But there's an impression in the community that this project's just going to start. It's never been planned to do that. We have to wait for the money catches up. And we have the other issue that's out there, just that at some point you need to talk about. This originally was going to have a proffer, and the proffer's gone. That was $1 million.
Yeah, that's what I would.
Is that above and beyond the $3 million, or was that included in the $3 million?
Well, the intent was ultimately in, 20 years? At some point, you get $1 million back that would help offset the project.
So it's not a $4 million project that we
It's a $3 million project.
No, we budget the total cost.
I just raise that because that becomes part of your future decisions. With the email I saw, it sounded like the project's going to start.
It is a big sidewalk and drainage project. A big price tag.
Well, it's doing a lot of things simultaneously.
Yes, yeah, sidewalk and drainage. Wasn't it?
All right, we got to move along.
Let's move it. Okay. Yeah.
Just any other questions on that page?
Yeah, one more point out. Here's the city match for the interchange. So, and then you already talked about the Omni. Any more questions?
And have we said enough to kind of pull that aside?
Yeah, I have no about the Omni. Yeah. Okay. Last part of bonded are parks and recreation. There's only one project in 11 proposed. That's the first portion of the Washington Park pool and bathhouse for $100,000. And that's your total bondable projects for FY11.
So Washington Park, where collection is not very old building.
No, this is the bathhouse. This is the old one.
It's not.
It's semi nasty.
Yeah, pool is lovely. The pool is very nice, but not the bathhouse.
Is that a good way to describe it?
Semi nasty.
I'm wanting to take my children.
The pool renovations are actually, they're 15 years old now. Okay. 1995. There are some structural things in the pool that are going to be taken care of between now and then. Now and the time we open for the season, excuse me. We've done some spot repairs in the bathhouse over the last couple of winters. Just replace all the interior lighting.
We never fixed it like it should have been fixed when we did the renovation.
The bathhouse itself, when the pool was redone in the mid-90s, the bathhouse was not done at all.
Let me point you to two others that are future, but because some of them will start coming up. The Reese Park renovation in FY12 and the Azalea Park renovations. The Azalea Park master planning process is coming forward fairly soon.
We're in the public comment period right now.
So those are being talked about in the community. I just wanted
again,
to
the Reeves Park, my recollection was not that old.
It's there's really not much there except a couple of playgrounds and the picnic shelters. And the master plan calls for some improvements and some relocation of playgrounds and bigger open play area and some internal park trails.
And then the CIP, which again is a future budget year, looks towards discussions about the master plan for McIntyre Park a year from now.
Well, this is money for implementation of plan, not just making more plans.
That'd be both.
Could possibly, the way we projected this out was that so some of this funding would become available and aligned at the same time that the Y was coming to close of construction, so that the relocation of the picnic shelters would be taken care of with this. A couple of other things associated with the master plan for the west side of the park, which has already been adopted. There is money in another account that's been appropriated years ago, and it's just still sitting there, that's available for master planning of the east side of the park. So that's already existing. It's just not shown in future years for additional funding.
And you're still anticipating that might kick off this summer sometime?
Well, I think it's in everyone's best interest that we know whether there's a decision on the road to the interchange before we start that process, just so that the planning and all of the community involvement isn't clouded by that.
So you're saying that will be decided this summer?
Tough to correct.
No question.
What do you think, Craig?
I'll do my best.
And then I'll point out, and you're going to see this at the end, the contingency. I mean, we're in an era of getting really good prices.
Zero.
We're not sure that's going to continue, but...
There's a contingency at the end. So
there is a contingency at the end, but it's small. This is another budgeting balancing deal, too.
Anything else about this? Okay, moving on. This is the, obviously, this is the federal state money for the interchange. Pretty cut and dry. Again, as Jim explained, we need to go ahead and get the money appropriated and start spending before they'll pay us back.
And this is the first of a state project that we manage and the dollars run through the city budget.
You'll see this again and again. Okay. These are now the non-bindable projects. These are the ones we're cash paying for. These actually, the only new one on here is the neighborhood improvements of $100,000 a year. Jim could talk about those. Do you have any questions?
That used to be the fund for, and it was eliminated.
The neighborhood improvements for their CIP.
It's really not new. We've had had money.
Well, we took it out for a year.
We funded last year.
Right. That was it. We took it out a year. Okay. Excuse me.
We also increased funding for other things, drainage, sidewalks that originally were sort of all lumped into neighborhood improvements, neighborhood CIP.
So is there programming for this already, or is it more a pool of money to do various projects?
So pool of money to do various projects as neighborhood issues come up that we can address primarily on an emergency or short-term basis is what we've used for the last couple of years.
Okay. Any other questions on this page? All right. Facilities capital projects. This first one is just for KTAC. It's part of our agreement. The county pays a share as well. The next lot, transportation access. The new one on here is the Belmont commercial improvements.
Yeah, question on that. What is the plan for it, and why are we spending $200,000 when the sidewalks were built only a few years back?
This is the plan council committed to.
We're talking about the Belmont one?
Talk about the specific projects. Yeah, the master planning was a noise issue, the zoning changes, and the physical infrastructure improvements. And
it's teeing up two intersections, doing some drainage improvements and some sidewalk improvements and a little street furniture.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's needed.
Well, it's the one council approved. I mean, you don't have to do this one. You can set it aside or come back and look at it.
When did we approve it? I'm very curious now.
I don't think we ever approved it.
I don't think we ever approved it.
We're sorry, we made a commitment to work with them on some.
We had $200,000 in the report, right?
I mean, that's what we've said all along is 200, since we completed the budget, is 200. Is a, we don't know how far it'll go, but we think it'll do most of what we talked about.
We've been targeting that number.
I know, I'm just saying council's never voted on that number. I support that number, but we've never taken official action.
No, and it's in the budget, which we'll take official action on.
So. That's true.
Yeah.
But from a planning standpoint, it was. And having the neighborhood meetings and the kind of projects and so on and so forth.
Another thing which I would like to see, I'm always bothered by that we put so little money in bicycles. I know every time I raise this question, you say, well, it just comes from somewhere else in trail funds.
Bicycle infrastructure?
What type of infrastructure?
Building bikes trail. Bike trails.
We don't deal with the trails. I like to let Brian speak to the trail stuff.
Trails are on the street, for example.
This is on street, which we don't see much infrastructure unless you do something really dramatic. And then in the trails budget, we have off the street trails for pedestrians and et cetera.
It seems to me that you need to do more on the street.
Well, unless you start removing parking or closing down traffic lanes or making major intersection improvements,
I think if you look at the network you gave us last time, Jim told me a presentation, there are gaps in the network, in the on-street network. And I think they have to be dealt with.
Ms. Tudor, we went out 3 years ago with the biking community, and we measured every street in town with them. We spent a Saturday everywhere they thought we could put bike lanes, trying to fill any gaps. And without removing parking, there's one little stretch of Rose Hill, but there's nowhere else without removing parking that we can put on-street bike lanes. Now, as you and I discussed earlier, we want to come to council this summer and talk about our policies and look at, are we willing to remove some on-street parking? Are we willing to look at using some lanes and that sort of thing? But given what we have now, we can't stripe any other lanes without removing parking.
But if we know you're coming to us with that, is there nothing in the budget that would pay
for it? We've got it in our traffic improvements where
it's
we could do that. And then we're not talking a lot of money to paint, put the paint down.
That was my concern, too, is that we know that you're coming with certain improvements that will demand a certain amount of money besides just paint, but actually some structural stuff.
Well, we would do that under the basic, the citywide traffic improvements. Mm-hmm.
So that's in the budget.
We've been taking some of those things.
I guess I slightly disagree in the sense that I think there could be improvements on the street. The main wall, widening the street a little bit, removing the sidewalk. But at least I know two locations you map, I don't know the street name now, where you can complete the network. And what I'm saying basically is that you're never going to have bike riders in a serious way for transportation unless you provide continuous interlinked bike lanes.
I don't disagree, and that's why we want to come talk about policy changes overall this summer and how we link up a lot of areas. But to do the ones just quickly, cheaply, we've done all of them. You're right. It'll take widening, it'll take removing parking, that sort of thing.
I sort of agree with Mr. Tolbert. I think we have to have a discussion on removing traffic. Also there are some places where we just would need to put major money. I mean, what one of the places people would like to see us improve is Emmett Street, the city portion of Emmett Street. Well, it's not wide. I mean, it involves some real work to move into the sidewalk right away or whatever. It's going to be, I mean, there might be a plan that could accomplish it, but it's not a $25,000.
So
I'd like to see us really talk about what we need to do to increase lanes, but I think that's a big conversation, and it's not a $25,000.
I agree with you. It's just what I'm saying, that if you're going to do that ever, you need to put some money in there.
For example, the reverse is where do you want to do it and calculate the cost. And there are political issues with a number of these, too.
I was driving after a presentation by Jim Tolbert. I see that there are lanes on Emmett Street are wider than they need to be for in-town traffic. You could easily gain 5 feet of each side.
Oh, that's good.
Emmett Street?
Yes.
Let's push that ahead this summer, then.
Is this the time, I don't know when it makes sense to address the Planning Commission recommendations. Should we do it as the items come up on the screen?
That's fine. If you'd like to do it that way.
You have the list, so you can make sure you're pointing them out.
It's in your tab, actually right after the CIP.
Do you want to set something, just while we're on the bus, do you want to set something aside or not? I'm not hearing
it. I'm not seeing
it. It sounds like it's included.
It sounds set aside.
Not for major improvements, only for the small improvements we have. Here. I think it is also, symbolically, also I think it's important to set aside some money and show their intent that we're going to do something instead of just keep on studying them.
How was that, or was that, $25,000 used last year or this year for bicycles?
Jim addressed that.
For the bike preemption on West Main and a couple of other places.
So maybe if nothing else, just add a similar amount this year on bicycle infrastructure to send a signal that we haven't dropped our commitment. Is that?
Well, as a biker, just take parking off of West Main Street. That costs you zero.
Right.
So.
Right, David?
Do I hear a third?
If it's just a matter of that it's already in the budget somewhere else.
Well, is that really true?
We pay for it out of the traffic improvement.
So
$50,000 out of the traffic improvement allocation.
So we can look forward to continuing to have bicycle preemption during the coming year?
We are looking at that at various intersections. We don't have many more, it makes sense, but we do have some that we can do, yes, sir.
How many more do you think you would do?
She's been looking at it with Lonnie. I'm not sure.
Like five?
There's probably maybe five total around.
That's what I've heard.
They cost several thousands of dollars to do, which depending on the cameras that are already there.
So it's independent of that. Could we mark the ones that have been done so bicyclists know?
We're working on some signage with the MUTCD folks now to try to get something standard to do that.
So can we just... what do people think about just taking money that's already in that, but that we know is for infrastructure, put it here, just so it's clear that that's something we're committing to for bicycle infrastructure and it won't get spent for something else? So.
Yeah, I would suggest if you want to do that, I don't know how Leslie would do it, but take 50,000 of the 150 that's allocated for citywide traffic improvements and show that for bike.
And put it here.
Traffic at 100, which
just doesn't
change the budget, but it does.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Not add 50,000 that we don't have already in the budget, but move it from an invisible place to a visible place.
Right. I think say something about our intent.
Yeah, I think, and it commits us to spending it on that.
All right, there's a couple other transportation suggestions. One was, and I think we just owe the Planning Commission our attention to these. One is a suggestion to delete funding from the CIP for the 250 interchange at Manpower Park. The commission is split 3-3. I'm going to assume that there's not a majority on council to do that.
Would that have the effect of killing the parkway? I think we want to kill the parkway. Right. Let's just add that.
So the other one would be to create an endangered building contingency fund in this transportation and access. Six commissioners agreed.
What does that mean?
I was going to ask the same exact question. I don't know if Mr. Emery wants to address that or Mr.
Kohler. Jenny Keller. I'm not sure where the money was.
When this one, the lumber building was going on, and
right,
the origin of the...
It was a thought that we could use, have a pool of money to buy something if it was endangered, if we really wanted to buy it.
And I gather the staff recommend, didn't see merit or didn't feel it was high enough priority.
What was your sense coming out of the Planning Commission? Is that something that's worth going to the mat for, or is that?
That was just something that Jen brought up that night.
You got a 6-0 vote.
I don't quite understand how it would not reduce funding to other projects. I mean, if we're trying to, if we have a certain amount of money in the CIP and we put money into a fund for endangered buildings,
you'd have to reduce something.
You'd have to reduce something. I mean.
Yeah, if you're going to really set money,
the contribution to
right.
The general
this
fund.
Was their comment, so yeah. This came right from them.
All right, I'm not sensing a groundswell of interest in that one. There was a proposal to create separate CIP categories for pedestrian and bike safety.
I think we just did that.
That's what we just did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on, and then others.
Check. What's the next? Okay.
Well, there's still a couple others.
Yeah, right. We'll go back when we get to that point. Okay. And here we are, parkland acquisition, which was also on their list, which we increased.
We listened.
Parks and Rec, excuse me, yes, go ahead. I was just going to walk through this, but if you had a question.
Well, is that, are we increasing that because we have something in mind?
Do we have, I don't know if this can be discussed in an open session or not, and if not, just say so, but do we have a price tag yet on Davis Field?
I don't believe we can discuss that. Defer to Craig.
I don't know the answer, so.
we know what the landowner desires.
And is this going to be sufficient to fund Davis Field and potentially other acquisitions?
No.
No.
I have a potential solution to the Davis Field scenario, but that solution doesn't, I think, need to be discussed in closed session. And while this is the $250,000 is great, my counsel to counsel again would be that there are a lot of potential acquisition opportunities out there that enhance connectivity and do a lot of forest protection and so forth. And it may not be the wisest thing to spend all of the funding in one location. And therefore, I have a different solution that I'd like to propose. At some point, we can do that.
And I'll point out that last year, when we adopted the budget, we did not anticipate any money in fiscal year 11 park plan acquisition.
That's correct.
Should we be thinking about increasing this beyond 250? I'm sort of at a disadvantage here because I don't know what your solution is.
I'm certainly not going to say.
Can we go into closed session for a minute?
No.
Well, we increased it with the
is your solution revenue neutral?
That you want to have it increased for.
I'm intending to argue strongly that we not take money away from stormwater initiatives. I feel like that was, and so before we start spending our CIP money a lot of other places, I'd like to have that discussed.
And I'll explain in a minute why.
Let's talk about that. Stormwater. Let's move on down the list, then we can go back to Parkland.
So if you're saying it's money neutral, so maybe we're going to just leave it for the time being and see what it is.
Let's talk about stormwater. You want to talk about stormwater?
Okay. And then go back.
Let me pass these.
So we'll flag that one as
then you may know the answer to what you need.
That's something that may need to be adjusted between now and April 4th is parkland acquisition based on a discussion we're going to have in closed session between now and April 12th. Is that fair?
That's
correct. Okay. So I'm passing out just some information on stormwater, on the program itself, and on the current funding situation, and looking into from 10 to 11. So what we did, and I wrote a memo about this and it went out last night, was originally way back when you all had discussed the fee, you decided at that time not to do it, that we put $600,000 a year into the CIP to get some, make some, you know, real progress in infrastructure. And in the memo I outlined, you started out with the $750,000 from the carryover from several years ago, and that's how you started that program. And then we had $600,000 programmed in 10, 11, and 12. At which point you all said after 3 years we're going to come back and revisit the fee option, and so that funding was then reduced to $100,000 a year. Going into the CIP process and trying to balance the various projects, we ended up reducing the amount from $600,000 to $350,000, so it was a reduction of $250,000. But if you look at the first sheet I gave you, here's the current situation in that stormwater initiatives funding account. Their current balance is $423,000. Now, as part of, there was some carryover available from fiscal year 2009 in the gas utilities fund. There's a stormwater account in that fund. That is in the gas utilities fund. We are proposing that we put that into the 2011 gas utilities capital budget. That is $339,000, almost $340,000. On top of the $350,000 they'll get in 11 from this general government CIP, they should have total funding of over $1 million if you include that current balance. If we'd given them the $650,000, they would have $100,000 less than this, because the $339,000 is higher than the $250,000 that they would have received in the first place. So that was our proposal going into the CIP. And that was why. So the money in our minds is not really reduced. It's just a different source of funding.
It seems to me that there will be sufficient willing this way to deal with the drainage issue.
And so what's the projection for this?
So you're assuming a fee.
Well, at that point, that's...
Well, that was a discussion.
Right.
But it tees back up.
It has not been decided, right.
What's saying if you don't have a fee, you're going to have to increase this?
And that's actually one of the Planning Commission comments as well, is to start looking or to implement that fee.
The discussion we've had among staff is we need to begin this summer with looking at the fee again. Can you generate interest in the community? Is council supportive of that process? And that might be a year-long process to come back with a fee structure that, in essence, from this plan, would be implemented in FY13. If you don't do that, then we've got to look at the future capital budget years of ramping up the stormwater money. It's on the commitment that we made, I guess.
Are we close to finishing?
Yes, I'm going to talk really fast. We're almost done.
But before, I mean, does that answer your question, David? Because it's,
well,
it was not clear.
Here's the thing to me. If I looked here, I could find the thing that came out that you sent this week talking about this. And in that memo, it did not say we were already planning to take money from the Public Works Department. It said we could. So I have a little trouble feeling that this is something you were planning to do all along but just didn't tell us about, knowing you were making a big change to the CIP. And I think it's more likely this is a response to seeing a council concern, seeing me be concerned at the last meeting. So,
they're listening to you.
Well, I'm glad, but I don't like it saying, I don't like hearing that this is, that we were planning to do this all along, we just forgot to tell you. I think that's, planning to put the money into, you were planning to replenish the stormwater CIP with money from public, from another source.
Well, the gas utilities fund FY09 stormwater money was in the budget dedicated for that purpose. What we didn't do was show here, there should have been an asterisk or something to show that. What I don't, the current balance thing was not in the other report, right?
It was.
Was
the
it?
One that was sent out yesterday?
$423,000. Mm-hmm. No, but the earlier one David was talking about.
No, I don't know about that.
Well, I'm happy to see there's money available. I guess I reacted, the language in the memo you sent that we got yesterday says, I'm glad to see it's there. I think this points out the need for a fee, though, because I think the easy thing to do to balance the budget is to take money out of an account like this, a stormwater account. My memory is that there was a need for, $5 million in projects that needed to be done in a critical way, and then there's a lot of money that needs to be spent just to find out exactly what kind of condition our sewers are in. I mean, so I don't think putting in $600,000 a year, $750,000 a year. It doesn't in the long run address our issues. I think it puts a band-aid over the problem, but it doesn't really get us to where we need to be. We need to have the gumption to support a utility, which council has not been willing to do. And I hope in a couple of years we will be.
And this package, which was in front of council, I mean, you're remembering right, we were saying then, at least $2.5 million a year, and we're at 600, even a million if you add all those up. I mean, I guess the thing I'd like to raise for council, are you comfortable in the staff moving forward fairly aggressively to look at the fee again and begin to have community discussions and council discussions and tee this up this summer?
I'm not that excited about the idea of paying at this time, personally, and I thought we had a schedule timing. We were going to wait for 2 years.
Well, if we're going to get to doing it in July of 13, you almost need a year lead time to
to begin the implementation and almost a year to have the discussions and get to the point, are you going to do it? At least, I mean, when we've looked at this before.
We're just going to raise heckles with the community. You're going to add some more text in this table.
Well, that's the whole debate. And so do you start it this summer or not? And if you don't, then we're looking at, I mean, I think it's less of an issue from the budget standpoint. What's the strategy for the future? And you don't have to decide that tonight, obviously. But
so why are you pushing us?
Because from a long-term financial planning standpoint, because we're going to start doing budget things in the next couple months, you'll have to, you know, as we're doing these scenarios, you're going to have to ramp up the stormwater money.
And so exactly how does a gas fund be reflected in the stormwater fund? Or does the gas division do its own work independently?
The stormwater budget is in the gas budget.
It's in the gas fund.
The environmental management program is in the gas fund.
Right, right.
Okay.
And that's where the stormwater book is at.
Okay. And so
it's a crazy... But that's where it is.
Okay.
And just, I'll remind you, 30% of the gas, is it 30% of the gas customers live in Alamar County?
Yeah.
David, I think one thing that may help you, the problem that is what you may have heard from someone on my staff is we requested that $339,000 as a carryover from last year, and it was not approved. And that's when they said, well, an option could be that they would put it in next year's capital money. So I think there's some misunderstanding.
Well, I didn't hear anything from anyone on your staff. I asked your staff to provide me with some information and send me a copy of this PowerPoint.
Okay.
But I didn't. I mean, this is all my own creative work, which may be why it's so confused. But
it is confusing.
But just so you're clear, that, you know, there's no one on your staff that gave me information on this. It was me calling and asking to have, actually what I asked for is the PowerPoints to be conveyed to me. Because I was very concerned that what staff had predicted, that without a utility, that what we'll find is that we may make a commitment for 1 year or the next year to make, you know, desperately needed improvements in our infrastructure, but without a utility, we'll find it a convenient place to cut. Because you don't see it, and I think this is an example of it. Even if it's, you know, I think what should have happened, and we wouldn't have had this conversation, would have been some information provided to City Council, or at least to me, that indicated that actually this wasn't a cut. And I'm not sure why those dots would have been connected.
I'm not sure. I mean,
because obviously you knew ahead of time that this was actually not a cut.
And
when I brought this up last week, you knew it was not a cut.
And
yet you waited until now to tell me that actually wasn't a cut.
Well, I will take full responsibility if I didn't write anything in the budget about that. So I'll sit here right now and go on record
to
say
that.
All right. Can I add to council's policy issues?
Let's finish. We have a commitment to go to.
Right.
Okay, everybody's got
to
get going.
Well, I don't want you all sitting here a year from now and we're having the same debate about stormwater.
You might.
Okay, then that's.
Well, I think
I'll take it off the list.
Stormwater utility was one of the things that the planning commission came in with too, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So let's put that in the parking lot. So, let's revisit it.
We're not dropping it. I think we need to discuss it another night.
Well, we're about to finish.
Okay, here's the last page. So this has. And I know Dave wants to speak about the Charlottesville Housing Fund.
So the Planning Commission recommended increasing that to reflect the amount that was in the Housing Strategy Report, or the recommended amount in the Housing Strategy Report, which is $1.4 million. The Housing Advisory Committee today endorsed that increase as well.
Council endorsed the thing it's based on.
We didn't endorse the dollar figure, but we endorsed the goal. And so the $1.4 million is essentially what the Housing Advisory Committee projected that would be the first year's installment towards achieving that goal.
And so my understanding is that they were also looking to us to to lock in funding for future years. I'm not really ready for that.
But I'd like
to look at this year.
So the question before council is, do we adopt that recommendation or do we leave that one or somewhere in between?
Where do you suggest we get the money?
Okay.
When within the $1.4 million, help my memory here.
I'm sorry?
Aren't there some other funds that are included
CDBG
in that
one? CDBG was also included.
But that's
in that. As part of the $1.4 right. million?
But that was for local housing funds.
I don't remember. That's in the $1.4 million included in CDBG or not?
Yes, sir. And that's the way that calculation was.
You're talking about maybe $100,000. He's talking about $400,000.
No, he's including CDBG.
I don't recall it including CDBG.
How much?
I thought it was for local housing dollars.
I am almost positive, but I could be wrong. I'm almost positive.
How much is the CDBG that you're thinking of?
The amount that goes to housing probably is $150,000 to $200,000 every year.
I think it's important to get clarity on this point before we make a final decision, but I would at least like to see us go on record as endorsing that dollar figure, however it comes together between CDBG and retention.
I'm not reporting here somewhere.
It seems to me that with CDBG at home, you're very close to that.
I remember we mentioned it. So
if you take the full CDBG amount, you do, but we've got to remember part of that goes to social programs.
But there's the home money also.
I'm sorry?
There's the home money also.
Right, home money.
I'm almost positive that, you know, we talked about how to use this to leverage federal dollars, other dollars.
Right.
So home being a source of federal funding.
Can we find out the information that we're going to look at next meeting?
I'll get you in the morning.
Thank you.
Where would you propose to take, if you're right, where would you propose to get this money from?
Well, one, off the top of my head, I'd reallocate the money from the breaking and turning the awning. That's sort of an obvious one. I mean, I think our tradition in the past has been to say, let's let the staff come back with recommendations, but that's one that I would look to.
I mean, in other places, you're reserved.
Okay. I just want to point out real quickly on the Home Energy Conservation Grant, the reason that was zeroed out is because we have a substantial carryover in that account. So,
and federal stimulus money.
And federal stimulus money, a substantial amount of federal stimulus money. So this is not a retreat from our commitment to home energy conservation.
And
I was going to ask about the contingency. Is that, I mean, can you talk about the proportion of money in the contingency and the logic of the non-bondable contingencies?
Well, traditionally, it's been a portion of the total projects, anywhere from like
7%
to 5%.
And is it based on projects? Like, in other words, you wouldn't need to have a contingency on the housing fund.
Right. I mean, actually, it's not even been that sophisticated. It's been a percentage of kind of the total. So it doesn't even take into account the fact that you wouldn't need a contingency on something like that, or probably even something on the Home Energy Conservation Grant Program, for example.
I think the other part of the logic is because of the bidding climate that we're in, we're getting good prices for what we've estimated on projects. That will obviously not continue. I think where the concern is more the future years. That contingency is probably not enough if the economy shifts again and the construction market picks up.
We need to revisit that because it's probably becoming more of a balancing mechanism at this point. So we probably need to take a better look at that in the future.
You mean in 12?
Yeah, certainly in 12. Look how much it goes down. So.
After a year, it's likely to be needed.
Okay. Want to wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up.
Okay, so this is, so
Can we just handle those when we talk about outside agencies?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I just wanted to put them up there because that was those.
Those are the ones we heard council talking about.
And you have information.
That we'll specifically bring up at the next meeting.
Yeah.
And I would like to add the amount for the ICAC, the overtime,
okay.
$15,000.
So that was it?
Mm-hmm. Internet to get to children.
Sorry, the...
That, okay.
Right.
That and that.
Sorry, I should have spelled it out.
Okay, so this will be, and next week is no work session. It's the budget forum, and I'll send out a reminder about that, and that's over in City Space. Okay, this is just saying what I just said.
So you there's any public?
Yeah, is there anybody from the public that would like to Ms. Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll just ask a few questions. On the, Ms. Beauregard said that $168,000 was now available for the council priority initiatives, and the proposed is $200,000. Back in fiscal year 08, it was $17,000. So how can you imagine what that looks like to the public? You're going in a couple of years from $17,000 to $200,000, and there's already $168,000 left over.
What's reflected in the 17 is what was left after council had been through the budget process, had gone through the year. It's not where council started.
What's changed since I've been on city council is the city manager putting money into sort of council priority list or whatever, with the idea that as we tinker with the budget, there's some tough decisions he didn't make in order that we would have the ability to make. So there's some undesignated money, knowing we had some conflicting priorities, for example, and knowing this time that there's councillors that wanted to see transit improvements.
I understand that, councillor, but I remember when that budget used to be around $25,000.
No,
that's a separate. It was council reserve.
That was like designated to be left over to throughout the year for stuff that we could end with that.
It's
been
all over the place.
And about the aquatic facility, and by Mr. Daly's stuff here. I remember when Mike Stutz was in your position, and he showed us pictures of Crow Pool. And Crow Pool is losing millions of gallons of water. So I know we're using it until the Smith Pool comes online, but Crow Pool to close it had always been the plan. So I particularly don't want to see Crow Pool not closed at the time it's supposed to be closed and not spend millions of hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to repair this pool that's supposed to be closed and is planned to be closed. Also, my second question, because...
Well, the intent is that all the costs, if that pool stays open, would be borne by the users, not the taxpayers.
Not a single dime.
Not a single. I mean, that's the proposal.
Well, that's the proposal, but it's not always the reality.
Well, I don't think anybody on council, not to interrupt, I don't think anybody on council disagreed with that proposal.
I'm going to be asked this question, so McIntyre Way will pull open, but if the MRE and the 250 interchange are built, will that ultimately be closed? I know it won't be closed this year, but does anybody know?
I think that's to be determined. Fair to say.
Because that road is going to go within a few feet of that pool?
Of the bathhouse or the engine to the engine house.
Yeah, but the bathhouse probably have to be removed, but the point is, okay, you're telling me that's to be determined. Okay, you were talking about the Levy House is empty now except for some storage. Well, there's an article in the paper quoting Judge Hogshire, he's from Circuit Court, and he said we are in desperate need of courtroom space, and he's even asking the federal government if he can borrow some of the federal courtrooms in that building up there on Vinegar Hill. It seemed to me, since Levy's empty, that would be a place to put extra courtrooms. Accessory since it's jointly owned by the city county, and both the city county courts really need space there.
And that's exactly what the study that's going on right now is looking at. Not all the different courtrooms and the different judges between the city and counties take advantage of Levy and the existing buildings.
Then I'll jump over real quickly under CIP non-bonded neighborhood improvements. And then in the fiscal year 2010, it was zero, and then it's proposed to jump up to 100,000. Does that mean neighborhoods can go ahead and start asking money for projects that we've had put on hold? I guess I addressed that to Mr. Talbot.
Not until the budget's adopted, no matter.
Well, obviously, but you know, we've been told there's no more budget money for city budget, neighborhood budget projects. But now you're saying you're proposing to put money back in so we can have projects funded.
Quite possibly, yes, ma'am.
Okay, and so I didn't hear any councilors say that was a bad idea at this point. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you being here tonight on behalf of the public. Absolutely. Anybody else like to speak? Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
See you on the 24th.
Good job, Brian.
So how'd you do that?